Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, I'm in Cincinnati with the team in question being the Padres. Sometimes I like to talk like Ted Leitner Day, where I take sentences backwards. Jay Posner, my boss, he's back in San Diego. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Kevin. I'm very glad. As much as I would love to be at the Montgomery Inn having ribs in Cincinnati, when I look at my phone and it says 88 feels like 97, I am very happy to be in San Diego. As I am most days, actually. But
What it feels like, 97? What's funny about that is I just came from Arizona where it was 100. And it was actually really pleasant. Now, a part of that is because you brace yourself when you go to Arizona, right?
Of course.
And 100 is far better than 120, which is what I think it was the last time that I was there with the Padres. And I will say this, at least it was a dry heat. And I mean that not in jest, because this place is disgusting in terms of the weather.
Right.
Very nice people, but in terms of the weather.
And it is supposed to, as I'm looking here, it is supposed to cool off as you're there. And of course, there's also a chance of rain, although it doesn't look like tonight is hopefully too much of a danger, but after tonight, good luck.
Right, it's supposed to roll through before tonight's game, but it's in the forecast. I'll tell you what, it's been that way a few times. The Padres obviously haven't lost a game. I think our longest delay that we sat through was like 35 minutes or something. That was in New York. And before that, it was like a 20-minute delay in Pittsburgh. And both of the times that, rolled through those cities, it was just like this. So the Padres have been very lucky this year. And you know what? Probably will be this weekend.
Well, I know that happened the last time. I think you were in Pittsburgh where it was like, oh, no, are they going to be able to get any of the games in? And everything breezed along. But quite a battle you've got coming up, though, at Cincinnati tonight. I mean, the Padres' worst record in the National League, and the Reds are almost right there, 59-81. I was looking. I remember they were pretty good for a couple months, and I looked it up today. They were 28-22 in June and July. Unfortunately for them, they're 11-22 since that time. Their pitching is dreadful. I was amazed this morning as I looked this up, their lowest ERA of any starter, anyone who started a game for them this year, and it's like 9 or 10 guys, 4.37 is the lowest ERA of any starter. That's Anthony DeSclafani, who pitches tomorrow in that game. But they do have a good closer. Iglesias has done well, and of course they've got some guys who can hit. Joey Votto's not having the best year, but always dangerous. Suarez is having a fantastic year. Scooter Gennett. And I do have to mention, Kevin, before we move on, one of my favorite players in baseball, Michael Lorenzen. I saw him come in when the Reds were in town a few months ago, and he's probably the best hitting pitcher in baseball that's not named Shohei Ohtani, who's not really a pitcher right now. And he's 6-for-23 this year, but his six hits include four home runs, which is just great. And he also has an ERA just over 3 in like 60 innings. So it's not like he can't pitch either. So a dual threat. He's from Cal State Fullerton, we should mention, for some of our Southern California fans who might have gone there, along with one fan I know in Ohio who went there. So what are you looking forward to this weekend now that the Padres are going into this hitter's ballpark with their rookie pitchers?
There you go. And it's there. You know, you mentioned the hitters. This is a great hitter's ballpark. And you got Eric Lauer going tonight. I believe Brett Kennedy tomorrow. Then it's Robbie Erlin and Jacob Nix on Sunday.
Correct.
So always the rookie pitchers, and especially, hey, how are they going to handle a bandbox like this? So there's always that. Lauer obviously coming off the 5 hitless innings. What was he up to? 81 pitches, which was far more than he had thrown in his rehab assignments. But, man, he looked good. He felt good. So that'll be interesting. There, I'm looking for that. What about this, Jay? And we can talk about this, how these guys have played lately, but it's also bigger picture. The corner outfielders, there was a point where you said, Hunter Renfroe, that's definitely who I take if you have to choose between them, and they very well might need to. Because, you know, what he's shown over a longer period, and there's just there's much more upside to him, I thought it was pretty clear cut that Hunter Renfroe over Franmil Reyes. Franmil Reyes continues to ride the waves of a rookie season, but show that he has the aptitude and the ability to be a pretty darn good hitter. Jay, what do you think?
Boy, that's tough, because I can't give up on Renfroe. Right. I just, you see too much of too many good things. I think he seems to have had maybe a few concentration lapses, especially defensively, this year, but there's potential there. You know, he's got a good arm, although it's a little scattered sometimes, but, Reyes is obviously limited defensively. I think you've noted he's improved. But I'm sure there's, and I think you've also noted there's probably a ceiling there for his defense just because of his sheer size.
Yeah.
His power is incredible. When he hits the ball, I mean, he's probably, I haven't studied all the StatCast stuff, but I mean, there are times where, you know, you look it up and it's 110, 114. I mean, he hits the ball very, very hard. A lot. If you're going to make me choose, I'm still going to go with Renfro. You know, I don't know that there's a way to make it work with both of those guys.
Right.
You'd have to look at what else, you know, if you're going to, some of it depends on where is Will Myers going to end up. Is he going to be a third baseman? This is addressed a little bit in your mailbag, which just went online today, about, you know, Myers, somebody asked, could Myers be a Ben Zobrist type player moving around? And sure, I could see that. But if he's going to be in the outfield and Renfro is going to be out there, and I mean, is Margot still the center fielder? I don't know. I mean, it's one of those calls. It's going to be a tough call. And what's the what's the trade market also? I mean, you know, what can you get for those guys? It's not an easy decision. But right now, without studying all the ins and outs of everything, from what I've seen, I would stay with Renfro.
And we haven't mentioned, you know, I mean, there's you made the points of Margot and what's Will Myers, and I do think they're leaning toward him being like the super utility who's bad is in the lineup, and then you just plug him in where you need to plug him in for a day. But I think that's where it's headed. Franchi Cordero.
Yeah, I didn't even get back to that. I knew I was missing somebody, and I left out Jankowski because I don't see him as a starter, but Franchi Cordero certainly is another guy that factors in to all this.
And there are 15 teams that don't have their pitcher hit. And I just think that Franmil Reyes is a commodity. Now, maybe not like just Franmil Reyes for somebody, but
sure,
the Padres are going to be, you know, packaging players, and they're going to be active this offseason. Also addressed in the mailbag, they found out they're going to be just as active as they anticipated because of some waiver moves that they made, where they put guys out there, they pulled them back, but teams were interested in these players. It just wasn't the right time to do it. I mean, the Padres expect to be very busy this offseason. So I just see that also tips the scales where Franmil Reyes, man, with the defensive liability, and he is. Look, I hate to say that. The guy's really improved, but you take the guy out every sixth inning when he's already hit like two homers, or he's homered in a game, or you know he could homer next time.
Right.
That's, you're just saying he's a liability. That's the fact.
No, I think that's true. And definitely in terms of a package, that's the kind of thing where I'm looking forward to seeing what happens in the offseason and packaging, you know, Reyes with a pitcher and seeing what you get back. Maybe even they package one of the catchers. I mean, who knows? I mean, I don't think we're going to find out.
Absolutely.
I don't think we're going to find out anything that we don't know about Mejia in these last few weeks. I mean, you know, his first at bat was certainly not indicative. At least you would hope it wasn't indicative of what he's been. And you look at his numbers, and obviously it's not. But
no, but he fit in with the Padres with that at bat.
No, that's true. I did notice, by the way, the Reds, I think, are last in strikeouts among their pitchers. So maybe the Padres might be able to get some more bats on the ball this weekend. But
so Mejia is starting tonight. Francisco Mejia acquired in the July 19th trade for Brad Hand and Adam Simber. So that's interesting. Also, you asked me, what do I look forward to? Well, sure. What are we going to find out? I don't know. But this is great, getting this prospect in here. And you mentioned, yes, absolutely. Virtually everyone on this roster could be had in a trade. And you can make arguments about, you know, well, why wouldn't they be tradable, or why wouldn't the Padres want to trade them? I'm not saying they want to trade everybody, but they can be had. Everyone except Derek Hosmer. And so
who's untradeable anyway.
Oh, you know, that's why I had the caveat. I knew you were going to jump in, Jay. That's good. The catchers, absolutely. They could find a way to play both these guys. And believe me, if you noted, and I think I even didn't quote all the times he said it. Austin Hedges, and I believed him, was very supportive of Francisco Mejia coming up. But I think I quoted two of the three or four times that he said it. But every time he talked about him and what he brought to the team, you know what he mentioned every single time? The other positions that Francisco Mejia played.
Just making sure everybody knows that, right?
I think it's great. We're going to see what he can do behind the plate. You know, he can also play third and outfield.
No, and I mean that's,
and I do think that's
what Austin Hedges
on the team.
That's what Hedges should say. I mean that, and
yes.
You know, look, he's done a lot. He certainly improved his offensive game in these past couple months, and he should look at himself as being the catcher of the future and wanting to be the catcher of the future. But
and I think they see him as the primary catcher of the
right.
future if both are still on the team.
And that's, I mean, I don't see any reason why you can't have both guys on the team. I mean, mm-hmm. AJ Ellis has started, what, 42 games, I think you wrote?
Yes, it's actually 41 at catcher, but I like to give him credit for the one he started DH. It's his only
okay,
his but career, but anyway, go ahead.
But still, 41 games at catcher, and if he was going to be the guy that was starting down the, you know, these last few weeks, you would figure mm-hmm. he'd get a few more in there. So he's going to start, you know, probably you would say 45 to 50 games at catcher. There's no reason that can't be the case next year, where Hedges starts 110 and, you know, Mejia starts 50, or, you know, and they break it up, something like that. And then Mejia also works in at third base and outfield. And again, just like Myers, you know, the same type of thing. So I think there's definitely room for these guys. What's that?
The Cubs are a phenomenal team, right? And they've won a World Series and they have a lot of those players and they keep replenishing. But I know that you can look from afar and I just get a little locked into the Padres, but I see what they're doing. But then when you go and the team that you're covering plays the Cubs 4 days in a row and you see what they do moving guys around, you're like, wow.
Yeah.
You cannot pencil anybody into a spot.
And I think that's a good thing. I mean, I know that one of the criticisms of Andy Green has been, oh, he doesn't keep with a set lineup and everything. Well, I mean, how set is Joe Maddon's lineup? You know, guys don't know Chris Bryant might play third base. He might play left field. He might play right field. Zobrist doesn't know where he's playing. I mean, I don't ever have any sympathy for the athletes in this situation. You know, you're a Major League Baseball player. You show up at the park every day. And if they tell you to play third base, if you're a third baseman, right fielder, or left fielder, you should be prepared to play any of those positions on a particular day. And you should be prepared to bat anywhere in the lineup. Although I still don't see why that's a big deal for people. A guy bats third or he bats sixth. Why should he care where he's batting? When he comes up to home plate, he's batting. He's the batter. I mean, I don't understand that mentality. And maybe it's a big deal to some players, maybe it's not, but I just don't see why that would be a function of a player's mental approach that I'm hitting third or I'm hitting sixth. When you get up there, you're up there. Do what you're supposed to do. Hit the ball somewhere, right?
It is a big deal to some guys, I'll start out by saying this. I agree with you. I know that certainly the new thinking baseball folks in the league agree with you, and there are players that agree with you. Now, there are different things maybe you're asked to do more often. If you're in a certain spot in the lineup, there's another side of the coin. Both can be true. Certainly, when I covered the game 20 years ago, before I took that sojourn on that other sport, man, guys were ticked off if they were – I mean, there was no such thing, basically. You were a number five hitter. You played third base. That
right.
was your deal.
Right. But things
but
change,
not the case
you know.
Anymore. Guys are getting used to it,
mm-hmm.
And you know you can maybe be a you can maybe wish that you were in the same spot every day, but they know that it's not. It's incumbent. I will say this: not that this is what we were talking about, but it's something Andy Green is good at, and it's something that players are very appreciative of. I've learned over the years from many players that he communicates. He might not say you're going to play left tomorrow, but a lot of times he does. But he makes sure that he tells them before they see the lineup card, by and large. And that's really all they can ask for. Look, this is what we're trying to do. Here's why. I mean, not every time. Sometimes it's like, do what I say. But, like, Andy's pretty darn good at that.
Right. No, and that's a good, you know, I think that's a good thing. And I like the idea of you know, guys moving around. I think the Dodgers, I think Dave Roberts, you know, the guy everybody wanted here.
Yep.
I think Dave Roberts has done that in L.A. I mean, you know, Bellinger was a first baseman. He was a center fielder. I mean, you know, different Max Muncy's moved around this year for the Dodgers, Chris Taylor's another guy that moves around and plays different positions. I mean, that if I'm a player, that's a good thing. I want to be in the lineup.
That's one thing that players, the guys I've talked to that, yeah, I'd like to be, you know, because there's a difference, Jay, between talking to a guy when he knows he's going to be quoted sometimes and when he's not, right?
Right, but right.
Sometimes you just have to say, the recorder's off, I want to learn, right? And so there's guys that maybe they don't prefer it, but they also understand, I ain't playing if I don't learn how to play another position.
Right.
You know, that's the deal. And we've brought up the Cubs and the Dodgers here, and those are valid. Those are two good teams. Those are teams fighting for playoff spot all year, every year, right? Well, there's also this to add to the Padres, and this, again, a little off topic, but it got me thinking. It's sort of on topic. People ripping into Andy Green. Andy Green makes the lineup. But do you think he's not talking to A.J. Preller every single day about player development and that sometimes that colors how the lineup is constructed? Like, that's exactly what happened.
Right, and I think he's talking to Darren Balsley as well, you know, in terms of the pitching. Uh-huh. That, you know, I don't think he's just going willy-nilly on the pitching staff without consulting with a guy who's been a pitching coach for as long as Darren Balsley has and done as good a job as Balsley has. So I think it's an organization thing. I mean, I know I was just reading something the other day. A lot of the A's players are frustrated.
Ooh, yeah.
Because they feel like, you know, the front office is running the show. But that's what that's how it works. I mean, that's I think the Dodgers, you know, somewhat
Dodgers.
Do that as well. I mean, you don't think Dave Roberts is talking to the front office. So I think, you know, it's an organization, and that's what maybe the new wave of players will understand that a little better. But the idea of winning is an organization-wide function, and it's not just, hey, the manager says this and he's making all these decisions in a vacuum. I don't think that happens.
It gets a little unfair, and I think this was brought up in the A's story, and it's something I think about all the time. The only guy who has to meet with the media twice a day
right,
is the manager. And so there's a lot of times he has to say things that he doesn't necessarily agree with, but he's a team player. That's basically every manager has kept his job more than a year.
Now, speaking of front office, and this was something I said I wanted to mention, I'm sure the front office had a lot to do, or probably everything to do, with Brian Mitchell getting another chance this week in Phoenix, greeted with horror by many Padre fans, which I'm not going to say I was surprised, because, you know, look, a lot of things that fans in any sport of any team do, you know, don't necessarily surprise me anymore. But I didn't understand the reluctance to put Brian Mitchell out there. I mean, the Padres are, these games are not win or else, do or die type of games. Brian Mitchell has had a couple months to get healthy or whatever was wrong with him, to work on some things and to show that maybe he's a different pitcher. I mean, obviously the Padres saw something in Brian Mitchell to commit the resources that they did to him. So why not give him a chance and give them a chance to rescue some value out of their investment and let him pitch a few games down the stretch? I realize the off days are going to screw things up a little bit, but to me, it was kind of a no-lose situation. If he goes out there and he gets shelled, okay, look, sorry, Brian, you're the same old Brian Mitchell, and we don't have any use for you anymore. But if he pitches a good game, which he did, then he showed that, hey, maybe there's something there. Now, you know, chances are there's not. I mean, but what I didn't understand the harm in letting him go out there and pitch, and I would say that about any game that he goes into, you know, in the final 3.5 weeks, is here's a chance to show that maybe the Padres can rescue something from this $12 or $13 million that they basically spent to bring him here. And, you know, 5 innings in, he showed that maybe there's a little bit something there, maybe, and he certainly deserves another chance. Okay, rant over. Your thoughts?
Jay, I mean, you make good points there, without a doubt, including you know, that there was no harm, and including that, hey, you know, it may not work out. It probably won't work out. None of us would be surprised. Now, look, he could be a part of the rotation. He could pitch well going through the spring, and they could trade him and get something for him, which they couldn't get a bucket of balls or a treadmill that everyone would be so fond of. You know, they couldn't do that a few months ago. So, absolutely. Now, we both understand why. I mean, maybe not the horror and the, but that's just how we do things now. We aren't just a little upset about something. It's the worst thing ever.
Right.
We kind of understood the guy had stunk. I mean, just absolutely awful. But none of us really know about the elbow. Like, he doesn't make an excuse of it, and it wasn't a factor in his starts, evidently. But none of us know about any other things going on, mechanical changes. Obviously, he worked on what I would say looks like a slider, this two-seam fastball. It worked really well. He didn't even have his best pitch, the curveball. So I thought that, you know what, it worked out well, and we'll see where Brian Mitchell goes. There was absolutely no harm. And I'll tell you this, I do believe that, of course, they invested all this. They need to see. They invested the whole Chase Headley money. They needed to see. But if they didn't think there was something redeeming, they wouldn't have done it. They do want to see their young pitchers. They thought there was something redeeming about Brian Mitchell.
Right. And like I said, for one night, he showed that there was. And I don't know when his next start might be, just the way the schedule works out. But, you know, one of these pitchers, this weekend could get into early trouble. And we see him come out of the bullpen instead of a guy like Matt Strom, who would normally,
Or I think that Andy is leaning toward Wednesday in Seattle. I think that's when it is, might be Tuesday, but I think he's leaning toward giving him the next shot in the rotation and then see where it goes from there. But because he did that, he did what he did in Arizona on Monday, and he deserves another shot. And they, again, need to see, all right, can he do this two starts in a row?
So. Right. No, I would agree with that.
There we go. Excellent fun, as always, Jay.
Kevin, enjoy your weekend and the nice long flight on Monday back to this side of the country. I don't think you'll have to deal with heat and humidity, with either heat or humidity in Seattle. Humidity, but the humidity of the cool kind.
Right, and the forecast is clear, but they also have a roof there. That's nice.
They do, and it's so. I like that ballpark. Have you been to that ballpark?
I had been once a while back. I have not covered a game there, though.
Yeah, I have not either.
Both of these ballparks.
I went once as a fan. I've not been to the Cincinnati ballpark, but I've been to Seattle as a fan, and I enjoyed it. I like the fact that they have a roof that's really sort of just a giant umbrella, which is very fitting for Seattle because it keeps the if it's cool outside, you still feel it. It doesn't it's not completely closed like it is in Arizona or Milwaukee or Miami, where you don't feel the outside. So if it's going to be 55 degrees, then you play in the 55 degree weather. You just don't get wet. So
I like that. I like that a lot. Here's the thing. They keep some stuff open in Miami. You brought it up because it just has stuck out. And it's like, why? Because it's still humid in there.
It's always humid. I think there's a week in November where it's not humid in Miami, but that's about it. So anyway, enjoy your weekend, and we will talk to you early next week from Seattle.
Awesome. I will talk to you later.